listening to the Crosscheck NHL Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark.
Hello and welcome to the Crosscheck NHL Show. Thanks for making the Crosscheck NHL Show your first listen every Tuesday and Thursday. We're free and available on all platforms, now including YouTube. My name is Mary Clark, staff writer for The Win, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mary C. Clark. I'm here with Andrew Berkshire, NHL analyst for the Montreal Gazette and host of Game Over Montreal on the SDPN. You can follow on Twitter at Andrew Berkshire. On this Thursday edition of the Crosscheck, Leon Draisaitl's explosive and tense exchange with Jim Matheson has lit up the hockey world with journalism takes while the Oilers continue to spiral. Also, the Canadiens announced a new general manager, and I'm sure Andrew is going to have some hot takes about it. Plus, we're also going to be joined by Hunter Hodes of Locked On Penguins later in the show to discuss Pittsburgh's impressive season and Tristan Jarry's return to form. So, Andrew, before we start off today's show, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I found out yesterday that even though I got COVID over the holidays, that I don't have to wait to get my booster. So, even though my doctor said that catching it is basically like getting a booster, so I'm going to be like four times protected, baby. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, still, it sucks that you got it, but that's nice that you're able to get the booster regardless. It's been weird since I had my grandfather's funeral last week, a week and a half ago now. I've been kind of feeling off a little bit, but I tested negative on a rapid test, but I know those aren't reliable. But so far I've been okay. I had to take Dayquil a couple of days, but so I don't know if it was just a cold or what, but. I'm feeling okay today, though. Yesterday, I woke up and was like, oh, I feel like I have a cold because I don't know. But today, at least, I'm doing much better. And it's nice that, you know, we're both here and both healthy and stuff like that, because, you know, we had a rough holiday. I think both of us, yes. Andrew, we had a very rough holiday for different reasons. But, you know, it's good to be back. Good to be, you know, still on YouTube. So congratulations again. You can see our faces and, you know, finally when we have visual gags, because we've had that before. You've done a couple of things. I think you put on a Spider-Man mask one time.
And yes, I did. Yeah.
Nobody can see it. So, yeah. So at least now you'll have the visual gags. But we are here to talk hockey. And the biggest thing is still the Oilers. So there is a small thing we'll get to after we discuss this. But the biggest thing is still the Oilers. And oh boy, Leon Draisaitl and Jim Matheson got into it earlier this week. It was a tense exchange between the two of them where Matheson asked a question and Draisaitl basically didn't respond how he wanted him to. And when Matheson asked Draisaitl to expand on it, basically he asked originally, like, is there basically anything the Oilers can get better at? And Draisaitl said, we have to get better at everything. Matheson was like, do you want to expand on that? Draisaitl said, no. And then Matheson said, why are you so pissy, Leon? And asked him twice why he was so pissy at him. And the back and forth between the two was super tense. And then everybody got, you know, their journalism hot takes off. so I think it is, I think it, this, this back and forth is a big example of what is going on in Edmonton right now in terms of, you know, the tenseness, the explosiveness. The tensions are boiling over, Andrew, and this is, you know, this is kind of like a big release for that. So do you have any journalism hot takes? Do you have anything, you know, anything you've been saving for this podcast? Because we've seen a lot of takes on Twitter about, you know, how Matheson was in the wrong, and how, you know, Zoom, because this happened over Zoom, and how Zoom press conferences and stuff are bad for journalists and players alike. So this is kind of a unique situation. So do you have any thoughts, Andrew?
I have many, many thoughts. I think the whole Zoom thing obviously looms large, and everybody's frustrated. Journalists are frustrated because they're basically not able to build a rapport with players anymore. They don't get any one-on-one time. And I understand that because, you know, they just got back to that. And then to have it snatched away is very frustrating. And Draisaitl is frustrated because, let's face it, his team sucks. And yeah. He and Connor McDavid were having, like, equally Hart Trophy-worthy seasons heading into this poor stretch here. So the fact that Draisaitl is the one being confronted by, like, what does your team need to do better, is got to be frustrating for him, because it's almost like the implication is like, what are you doing wrong? Because nobody's going to throw their whole team under the bus, right? And
Matheson was basically fishing for Drysdale throwing his goaltender under the bus.
Yes, which is what happened a couple weeks ago now, I think, when Dave Tippett threw the goaltender under the bus, Mikko Koskinen, and then Koskinen kind of came back and said like his team wasn't scoring anyway. So like tensions are high in Edmonton right now. But I think the whole situation needs the added context that Edmonton media puts everything on the players, specifically McDavid and Draisaitl. Like whenever anything goes wrong, it's McDavid's fault or it's Draisaitl's fault. They don't play hard enough defensively, blah, 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 blah. But they treat the organization with kid gloves. Like they will not say anything about Ken Holland negative. They are just total, for lack of a better term, I'm going to be harsh here, ass kissers. And a lot of them that have this like tough exterior, Jim Matheson's not the worst of them, honestly. I think Jim Matheson, for the most part, I think is very funny and is very old school, but is not as bad. Like he's a hot takeist, but he's not usually like this. Whereas guys like Mark Spector and a few of the other people in that group are just like,
it's a big hockey men. Yeah, it's a big like old hockey men club.
It's
like,
very old like hockey men, but none of them are hockey men. You know what I mean? It's like people who pride themselves on being adjacent to hockey men, but don't actually contribute anything. Like a guy like TSN's Ryan Rizog, who is famous for like constantly defending the establishment, right? And like anybody who questions, like the whole Rizog thing, like I saw a thread going on about how, you know, like journalists should be allowed to ask tough questions. Well, first of all, it wasn't a tough question. It was just a bad question. It was not interesting. It wasn't going to bring anything great out of it.
And I believe he asked it. And I believe he asked it multiple times before that viral clip too.
Yes. So. Yeah. There's added context before that. Right. So the other thing is they want to be able to ask hard questions. I agree. Journalists should be able to ask hard questions. But then whenever there's pushback on a journalist, like Ryan Rizog had this whole thread about how like people are dehumanizing Jim Matheson. Like, I'm sorry, but when you get to ask hard questions, it's, you know, you have a God-given right to do this as a journalist. But when people ask hard questions of you, you're being dehumanized. Shut up. Just like take the lumps, man. And like the way that Edmonton media built up Duncan Keith as this absolute cure-all perfection leader to come in and fix all of the Oilers' ills. And now, while they're struggling, where's Duncan Keith? Why aren't they asking Duncan Keith these questions? He's supposed to be this amazing leader. Why aren't you putting pressure? Why aren't you talking about how, oh, maybe we were wrong about Duncan Keith being the great leader that would fix all the problems with the Oilers. Maybe he's not that good. They can't do it because defending Duncan Keith is defending an established hockey guy. He's a future Hall of Famer. Whereas, you know, Leon Draisaitl, probably also a Hall of Famer, but a guy that they've already thrown in their chips as like not playing the right way, not doing the right thing. Whereas Keith is a Stanley Cup champion. And as we know, if you win a Stanley Cup, you play the right way. There's nobody on a Stanley Cup champion that might be a liability. And that's why hockey men trade for the worst players on Stanley Cup champions all the time. And end up being very disappointed. So it's like this whole confluence of stuff and the whole like lack of holding Ken Holland responsible. These are the same people who defended Chiarelli while he was butchering that roster. I just have no patience for people who want to be able to push hard and be aggressive. And then when people push back on them are like, "Ooh, you're being mean to me." Just, I don't like it. And then, I mean, we'll continue, but there's also the other story that came out about Jim Matheson, which I'm not sure you saw.
No, from George LaRocque. No, I did not see this.
Okay, well, let's continue on and
I will set you up for that in a little bit. I was gonna say though, it's funny that journalists are like, at least beat writers are like, you're dehumanizing, you know, Jim Matheson. It's sports. You're on a beat. For the most part, the hard-hitting journalism you're doing isn't the stuff that, you know, the Katie Strangs, you know, the Rick Westeds are doing.
You're not being locked out of important conversations. Yeah, like Ryan Rizog difference. Has never been locked out from anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a difference. And trust me, as somebody who, you know, writes funny jokes and, you know, writes, you know, ranks Christmas songs, ranks hockey jerseys, you know, does funny nonsense online, I know where I stand in the totem pole of like, importance to like the sporting world, and it's very low. And that's okay. I'm okay with my spot in life. And I feel like sometimes beat writers, you know, over, you know, conflate their influence outside of, you know, being, you know, they should do more, but a lot of them just are there to, you know, fill their quotes, like get their quotes and fill their stories with those quotes and not really say anything. And I think that's, you know, basically what the Edmonton media, for the most part, I think that there's, you know, some smaller journalists and blogs that are doing good work, but like, it's mostly that like old boys club, how you would expect a lot of sports media to be. And it's really kind of, you know, it's the biggest there, or at least it feels like in hockey. Because this problem, like you said, has been going on for some time. They didn't really criticize Peter Chiarelli when he was there, and we've talked about how bad of a general manager that guy was. So this has just been a problem that's been long running. And we haven't had something like this since Jake Voracek called one of the Flyers beat writers a weasel nearly a year ago, basically, which is wild to think about that was essentially a year ago. And that also was a Zoom press conference. I get, though, that like these wouldn't usually be highly publicized if these were just, you know, the regular locker room, you know, after one-on-one games,
right?
Yeah, or one-on-ones. Yeah, because I mean, I've been in a locker room for, you know, after practices, after games. I mean, there's like TV cameras there, but it's not there all the time, especially for practices and stuff like that. But it wouldn't be nearly as highly, like, it wouldn't nearly go viral as much if it wasn't on Zoom, which I'm pretty sure, I don't know, if, I don't think every, like, they broadcast those.
Yes, at least yeah, it, you like, can log into them.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a different beast. So, and I think, you know, players and fans and journalists are all kind of, like, I don't know if it's necessarily what we want. Maybe fans, you know, because they can, you know, directly log in and, you know, see the stuff, like see the questions. But for players and journalists, it's getting kind of tough for them. I mean, it's been tough for a while. And like you said, they had access in the locker room and then it got, you know, taken away again because of COVID. So I get it. I get that it's a tough situation. But this is the way I said it on Twitter is a play stupid games, win stupid prizes. If you're going to call somebody, you know, pissy, expect a very pissy answer in return. Like it, you know, you poke the bear one too many times, you're going to get your hand, you know, chomped on. So,
yes.
And I mean, to be fair, I am throwing shots when I have, you know, like I said, I know my place in the journalism totem pole. So I know I don't rank very high in terms of, you know, what I do for the sports world, but still, like, it seems like a journalism 101 of what not to do, especially because you're not in a one-on-one scenario. Just accept the fact that you didn't get a good quote. And I've been in locker rooms where, you know, teams have been losing. I've been in the Flyers locker room, not day to day, but I would go to practices, you know, back in the Dave Haxtell era, when they weren't doing as well. And it's tough to get stuff out of them when they don't want to talk at all. I've seen, you know, Wayne Simmonds and, you know, he can be a very talkative player when things are going well, but when things are not, he's very short with the media. So like every player is like this, and it sucks to have to cover a team in the middle of a losing streak, in the middle of, you know, a miserable season. I get that. But like, I don't know, this all could have been avoided, but maybe we'll look back on this and be like, this was a good thing. This is a good release of tension for the Oilers, but they're still kind of, you know, wrapped up in their cycle of misery, basically. And you know, like we talked about last show, the sooner that they make something happen, the better, but we don't really know if that's the case. But I think I've gone on for long enough about journalism ethics and stuff like that. So Andrew, can you please explain the other story that I clearly did not see and will probably make everything I just said moot, essentially?
Well, before I do, I just want to say that there is one thing you mentioned, like knowing your place in the journalism totem pole. I feel like that's part of the issue with a lot of beat writers, is that there's a category of beat writer that believes that they are like the multi-talented person, but like a reporter is not an analyst. Mm-hmm. And an insider is not an analyst. An insider is not really a reporter either, right? Because an insider is, they have a vested interest in maintaining all of their contacts, right? You can't really do a lot of big stories like Rick Westhead, whereas like Rick Westhead is a real reporter. He is not an insider. he doesn't talk to GMs and get the inside details. That's Elliot Friedman or Bob McKenzie or Darren Dreger. Those guys are not going to break stories the way that Rick Westhead will. So there's like different jobs, and people who try to do too many of those jobs end up looking silly a lot of the time. But the Jim Matheson story, George LaRock on a podcast a few years ago, a small podcast, told a story about how there was a guy who was making his comeback game, or like his first game in the NHL, after dealing with, I believe it was substance use issues. I don't have the exact story in front of me. I think I can find it really quickly. Yeah. Okay. So right here, the person's name was, it was an Oilers Flames game, Brant Myers. Okay. It was his first NHL game since getting out of drug rehab. His dad was in attendance. This is from LaRock. Jim Matheson told LaRock at the morning skate that Myers was saying, you know, I'm going to come after LaRock tonight. I'm going to make a big impression. I'm going to beat him up. And for those who don't know, who are younger and don't remember George LaRock, when George LaRock was in Edmonton, he was the undisputed best fighter in the league. Like, unbelievably scary, but also, like, he didn't like fighting because he was too strong. Like, frankly, LaRock is probably the best fighter in the history of the game. He was so strong, so ridiculously good at it, but very hesitant to do that job. He wanted everybody to agree to the situation, essentially, before it. And when Matheson told him this, he said LaRock was like really pissed off. He's like, you don't do that in this profession, right? You don't go to the media and tell people, oh, I'm going to beat this guy up and I'm coming for him. He better be ready. So during the game, he got matched up against Myers and he was like, okay, are you ready to do this? And Myers was like, okay. And LaRock hit him so hard that he broke his orbital bone and nearly blinded him. Ouch. And later on, he talked to Myers in, I guess in the hospital, and he said, like, listen, I'm sorry, I don't usually fight mad, but why were you saying stuff in the media that you were gonna like come after me? And he was like, I never said that. Now, he says that he confronted Matheson about this and Matheson laughed and basically said that he did it to rile LaRock up. Now, yeah. Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
George LaRock is not 100% trustworthy of a person. Like, he has a tendency to exaggerate and, like, I don't want to say misremember, but let's say, like, things that LaRock says are not always 100% true. And he did mention on the podcast that he wasn't 100% sure that it was Matheson. So, like, that's really important to this story. Okay.
All
right. Right? But if this did happen, that's really bad. And, like, yeah. A journalist has no place doing something like that.
Exactly. That's like journalism 101.
Dangerous. Yeah, you can't manipulate things to create a story. So it's one of those things where it's like we kind of have to talk about it because it is a crazy story, but we don't know if it's true or not. And we have to be very careful about accusing someone of this. So it's like if it happened, horrible.
Yes.
There's also a chance that LaRock is not being truthful about this, though, or that he misremembered what media member did this and it might not be Matheson. Honestly, it doesn't sound like Jim Matheson to me. Mm-hmm. Like, Jim Matheson is a guy who, like, I don't think he's a great hockey person, his takes are not great, but he seems like a genuinely nice guy 95% of the time. Mm-hmm. So it's surprising to me, but if it's true, man, like, I don't know if he should be covering games anymore.
All right, before we go to break and bring on Hunter, we wanted to mention briefly that the Canadians hired their new general manager, Kent Hughes, a former player agent. I'm sorry to make you continue talking, Andrew, but you are the resident Canadians expert on this show. So do you have any bit of insight, anything, you know, any analysis, you know, anything like that? Because I really have no idea who he is, because he seems to be, outside of being a former player agent, a relative newbie to the scene of just, you know, running the operations in a hockey organization.
Yeah, so Kent Hughes is a former player agent up until a couple days ago. He represents pretty high caliber players like Patrice Bergeron, Chris Letang, a few others as well. He seems to be a very successful person. He did his press conference welcoming him to the organization yesterday, which was pretty encouraging. He said, like, the right things. He seems to be very competent, a very, like, thoughtful speaker. But it's one of those situations where you also have to take it with a grain of salt, because at the end of the day, him and Jeff Gorton are friends, right? And it's like, at the end of the day, he hired his friend. And like, whenever NHL people do that, you're like, was it the best person or was it your friend? Although Jeff Gorton did have an amazing line during the press conference where people were like talking about how good of friends they are. And he was like, listen, he's not my best friend. No offense, not my best friend. It's like, okay, just throw him under the bus there. But I think it's an encouraging move for the Montreal Canadiens. From what I've heard, he's very focused on player development. That's like his thing as an agent. Very well respected by players, seems to be very knowledgeable. It's a good situation. I think that a lot is going to depend on who they round out their whole organization with, because they have big gaps in their management structure right now. Trevor Timmins was their like head of pro and amateur scouting, I believe. He was fired. Scott Mellenby was their assistant GM. He was fired. So they've got holes to fill. And that's going to be the most interesting thing going through the rest of the season and into the offseason, because I'm not sure how much they can move out this year because of all the players signed to term. But it's a fun situation. It's nice to see somebody who's not a former player,
yeah,
or former NHL player get a chance here, because as much as I like Matthew Darche and I thought the idea of Danny Briere was interesting.
Yeah, Danny Briere would have crushed me as a Flyers fan. Which,
well, there's still a chance that Danny Briere may end up in the organization based on what I heard. So
I don't want to.
And he's a former Canadiens player too.
I know, but growing up as a Flyers fan, he was near and dear to my heart. We're going to talk more about that, but it is, you know, it's good to see the Canadiens seemingly making steps in the right direction, at least from what you've said. But, you know, they've got a long way to go. They went from, you know, being in the Stanley Cup final to, you know, being a terrible, terrible team this year. So they've got a very long way to go to get back to relevance. But coming up after this break, we are going to talk to Hunter Hodes of Locked On Penguins, which is why I mentioned talking about the Flyers, because they also have a player near and dear to my heart on their team now. But I haven't talked to Hunter in a while, and this is going to be, I think, a fun conversation. But we're going to talk to him right after this break. BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right. Hello, Hunter. Welcome to the show. This is a different way we're kind of doing this. We're kind of doing this live. So happy to have you here, Hunter. And like I said before the break, this is Hunter Hodes of Locked On Penguins. It's good to finally talk to you. How are you doing?
I'm not doing too bad. You know, glad to be back here. I know the first time I was on here, I know I was only on with Andrew, but you know, I'm glad to be back here with both of you this time.
Yeah, I'm sad I missed you the last time. It was during our summer off-season content that we had, and I just was unable to do it that day for some reason or another. And we have worked together before at Fansided, so yep. It's finally nice to actually get to talk to you face-to-face, and obviously Andrew has spoken to you before, but we go back and forth on Twitter all the time, and I think one of the first things I wanted to ask you about the Penguins is because right now they're first in the wild card, 8-2-0 in their last 10. So how does it feel to be right about the Penguins being competitors again? Because I was wrong and you were right. And I feel like I need to own up to that because I think I talked a lot of smack on the Penguins before the season started. So I just wanted to publicly apologize here because you were right.
You know, Mary, I always say this, you know, you can bet against the Penguins at your own peril until they actually miss the playoffs. They should be a lock to usually get in unless they actually are playing pretty bad and the numbers say that. But I got to say, I didn't see them being this good this year. You know, I thought they would obviously contend for a playoff spot and get in. But the way they've been playing for, I think, the last 5 to 6 weeks, it reeks of just a team that can contend. And, you know, this is the first time if these two players are back in the lineup tonight that they will have a full, healthy 12 forwards, 6 defensemen, and their starting goaltender. It's just, you know, 2 COVID outbreaks, numerous injuries. But, you know, they've been able to withstand all that. They have some of the best underlying numbers in the league, both with expected goals, possession numbers, just everything. And they're starting to score a bit more, but they're also playing a really nice brand of defensive hockey that we're just not used to seeing that much. You know, it kind of it reminds me of the Islanders a little bit in a way, but the Penguins can actually score unlike the Islanders. So it's just they're a fun team to watch. And you know, as of right now, with how they've been playing the last 5 to 6 weeks, I think they can beat almost any team in this conference, close to it, I would say.
Yeah, they are a scary team, and they always seem to have that reputation of, you know, never, you're right, never count them out. And I think I parroted that exact phrase, but I really thought this was the year. But a big reason that it hasn't been the year is because Tristan Jarry is playing absolutely out of his mind, and just an incredible goaltender. And I think, you know, if it not for Igor Shesterkin up in New York, would probably be maybe a Vezina, like the Vezina leader at this point, you know, halfway through the season. But is there enough evidence now for Jarry that last year was a rare misstep for him and this is who he is? Because last year was a really big down year for him. And, you know, his performance in the playoffs was one of the reasons why the Penguins did not advance. So is this year, you know, actually who Tristan Jarry is, or are we more, you know, somewhere in the middle?
Well, you know, we're going to find that out, in the playoffs for sure. I've been having this saying on my show, you don't have like this kind of, you know, season, you know, without being tested in the playoffs. And, you know, that's where he's going to have to face his demons. Obviously, you know, you are right. He's been a top five goaltender in the league this year. He's top five in goals saved above expected, top five in save percentage, goals against average, you know, all those stats. And, you know, I think a big part of that is due to, you know, the new goalie coach, Andy Kyoto. You know, I was one of those people that was probably ready to run him out of town after that series, because the Penguins flat out dominated the Islanders. If they get even average goaltending in that series, they probably whoop those guys in five or six games. I mean, they were just outside of, I would say, game three up on the island, the Penguins dominated them territorially, you know, scoring chances wise, everything. They just couldn't buy a save. But this year, you know, he's been more aggressive, I think. That's been the really big one that I've noticed. And, you know, he's just – whatever he's done with Kyoto, it's working and then some. As for, you know, if this is the norm, I think it's probably – I would lean towards this, but it's not all the way there. I don't think he's as bad as where he was in the playoffs. I also don't think he's as good as what we've seen consistently this year. He had a bad start the last game against Vegas. I mean, that's allowed. Every goalie's going to have a bad game. But – you know, I still think he is one of the better goalies in the league. And, you know, he's shown that this year. So if he can continue this for the next 3 months or close to it, you know, obviously we're going to find out then. But, you know, I'm a lot more comfortable with him starting a playoff game at this point than I was, you know, what, 8 months ago at this point.
If Jarry does struggle at the beginning of the playoffs, how much of watching that is going to be like flashback to Marc-Andre Fleury, who had some great seasons and then for like a 3 or 4 year stretch was just absolute Swiss cheese in the playoffs for what apparently no reason, and has really worked that out of his game clearly. But that's just a weird thing to happen. Like, that's the vibes that I got from Tristan Jarry last year too. Not that he was amazing during the regular season, but it just seemed like everything that could go wrong went wrong. The only thing we were missing was a goal where he was like completely out of the net and like turned the opposite way.
I mean, he did the Josh Bailey thing, which was just, I can't get that out of my head. It was just a banner moment for Pittsburgh sports last year. But I think I would, if that were to basically happen again, I'd be definitely really worried. This is one of the reasons why I want them to go out and get a backup. You know, Casey DeSmith has been really bad this year. I know Louis Domingue just had a really nice start the last game. I would continue to give him starts, but am I trusting him to back up Tristan for a playoff series? No. I mean, there's some options out there. You know, Halak out in Vancouver. There's Braden Holtby. That would be full circle for all the Yinzers who like to chant his name when he hasn't even given up a goal yet. So they have their options. It's all about if Ron Hextall wants to actually go out and get some help. And I think he will. I mean, that's the real big weakness of the teams. They don't have an actual backup to Tristan, but you know, I would definitely get a lot of those story flashbacks. That's for sure. I mean, the guy had to see a sports psychologist, for God's sake, during a couple of those years, especially after the, Flyer series where, you know, Brizgalov was really bad, but then Fleury just took it to another level and just cost
him. I have such fond memories of that time. And it wasn't even just because, like, the Flyers eventually won out. Just the games were so wacky. Like, and I watched them, like, in college on a... Like, at the time when I went to Penn State, they didn't have like you had bandwidth limits on your internet, and this is, I guess, aging me a little bit, but I had to watch them in my dorm's computer lab, basically, because I couldn't find them on TV or didn't want to watch the Penguins feed because State College is, you know, Pittsburgh market and not a Philly market. So I was like, I can't do this. I need to watch it. So I have very fond memories of watching that series in my dorm's computer room.
Was that 2011-12?
Yeah. It was my first year of college.
Flurry had an 834 in that series.
That was the most bonkers series. I mean, like, yes, I know that that series sticks out in Penguins fans' memory, but you guys have had a lot over the Flyers over the years. So I think it evens out just a little bit. So let me have this one. You guys can have all your cups and whatnot. But, you know, the trade deadline is coming up. I mean, not soon, because it is in March, but we're going to get there pretty quickly, you know, especially because the NHL just announced the dates of a whole bunch of games that were rescheduled over the Olympic break. Besides a goaltender, is there any other player you can see the Penguins targeting? Because Ron Hextall, I should know, has, you know, as a Flyers fan, his motto is usually patience, but he sees something with this Penguins team. Is there any other wants or needs the Penguins should have at the deadline outside of a goaltender?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a really good question. It's just their top 12, you know, they'll roll out Gensel, Crosby, Rust, Zucker, Malkin, Kapanen, probably something with Heinen and Carter and Rodriguez, and then they'll have their checking line or the fourth line. Honestly, excuse me, for the forwards, I don't really see a big need there unless they actually wanted to go out and – upgrade if they want to. And, you know, if they want to give up a first or something to try to go get one more, you know, obviously long cup run, be my guess. You know, Crosby and Malkin are chasing their fourth. You know, obviously Gretzky and Messier did that as well. They would be one of the only duos to have four in NHL history. So I could see Ron doing that, though. Is he usually one to make like a big blockbuster trade? I don't think so. I know he was obviously in Philadelphia all those years. He made like a couple decently sized ones, obviously with Braden Shen, I think, but he's not usually someone to go swinging for the fences. Defensively, I don't really see too much of an upgrade there. If they want to go out and get a number five or number six, I think that's fine. Or if you want to slide John Marino down, he's been up and down this season. He hasn't gotten back to his rookie form yet, but you know, Mike Matheson, for all of the hate that Penguins fans give him on social media, including myself, he is a full chaos player, and he is actually having his best season overall, top basically three in expected goals and possession and scoring chances and all that. But I really don't think he's going to see a need to upgrade this roster just because the forward depth is among the league's best. The defense is not among the league's best, but it does the job, especially when Chris Letang is having the season that he's having right now. If it weren't, I think, for Makar, Fox, and Hedman, he'd probably be a Norris finalist at the end of the season.
He's been doing really well this year. Yeah. Another player that's been doing really well is Jake Gensel, who continues to surprise me year after year, because for a little while, it seems like he was just another one of those players that you stick alongside Crosby and they miraculously put up a whole bunch of points. And I know he's still on Crosby's line this year, but he really seems to have come into his own. I mean, because, you know, I'm going to ask about this in a little bit, but Crosby and Malkin really haven't had, for one reason or another, haven't had as big of an impact, it feels like, as they've had in years past. But has Jake Gensel shown that he can have success away from Crosby now and continue to be impactful when, you know, Crosby and Malkin eventually do leave this team? Because obviously it's not happening now, but it will happen eventually. So has he kind of shown and stepped up in that role, you know, for the future of this Penguins team?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even when he's not with Sid, I mean, he's played a lot of minutes with Gino when Sid was out, I think the last couple of years, and he fit on that line just fine. And, you know, Gino, him and Sid are, I would say, two different players. They're similar in some ways, but they're also different in other ways. And, you know, he was still great next to him, even when, you know, both of them have been out, you know, he's played and, you know, he's still done well. You know, he's not, you know, that typical Mark Donk player that, you know, you see on social media that just you stick him on there and he just scores like 3 goals in 2 games. You know, Jake just has such a great shot. And if you give him the smallest bit of space, he's going to just take you to town. I mean, I've been saying this probably for the last year, year and a half. I know, you know, Alex Ovechkin does his thing, probably the greatest goal scorer of all time. Draisaitl is awesome with as well. But I don't think there are 5 pure goal scorers in this league that can do what Jake does. And, you know, this is now 5 straight years of him scoring 20-plus. He has a knack for getting to the high danger areas and just, you know, filling the back of the net. And, you know, he's that elite in that regard. And, you know, I'll have to remind everyone that he only makes $6 million per. I would love to see what he would get on the open market, because it would probably be, say, north of 8. But yeah, I mean, I would probably say right now, once the 3 big guns retire, he's probably the next team captain. I mean, he's the best player outside of those 3, I mean, at least in my opinion. So I think he's also been taking on a little bit more of a leadership role these last couple of years. So, you know, he's been great. You know, whatever line you put him on, heck, you can put him on the power play even without Sid. He was on there without Sid for a lot of this year when he was dealing with his injury and COVID. You know, he was still putting up a lot of points and just goals. So he's just been nothing short of spectacular.
Yeah,
it seems like the only thing that the Penguins really need to shore up, as you mentioned, is maybe a backup goaltender, maybe somebody with a bit more of a track record than Louis Domingue. I mean, as a person who covers the Montreal Canadiens, I feel like Jake Allen would be a perfect situation in Pittsburgh. He's a guy that can take over if, you know, Tristan Jarry goes over out with an injury. His cap hit's really reasonable, but there's not a ton of goaltenders available. I don't think they can afford Marc-Andre Fleury to come back, though. I don't think that's happening.
I think that will be a bit awkward, especially because Tristan's been really good this year. And I think the, obviously a lot of like the fan segment just with all the Fleury fans and everything. And, you know, I love Marc-Andre Fleury, don't get me wrong, but I just think that would be a little awkward just because you have your starter playing out of his mind and you're going to go get a fan favorite. And then I think the pressure is going to be really amped on you, because if you falter for a few games, who's coming in the net? He is. And he's probably not going to want to give up anytime soon. Yeah, I forgot, Andrew. What is Jake Allen's salary cap again? Or his cap?
It's just around $2 million, I believe.
That, I think, would work for the Penguins, even though they're right up against the cap.
Yeah, I mean, by the time the trade deadline rolls around, you're not taking on that much, right? Jake Allen, oh, he's not even on the roster right now. 2.875, so it's a little bit more than I thought, but signed for this year and next year, so that might be a little bit of an issue for the Penguins, but you never know.
Yeah, I'd have to. Well, they'd probably have to wiggle some money in and out, just because they always have to do that.
This is true. That's what happens when you win 3 Stanley Cups in a decade, right?
Yeah. This is true.
I'm good with 3, though. If I can get one more before they all go, I will gladly take that. And I think this is probably their best shot at it since 2017, in my opinion.
They're really scary this year, but we're going to talk more, speaking of, you know, Crosby and Malkin's legacies, the Mark Donk effect, because that is a huge reason why the Penguins have had success. And that'll all be coming up right after the break. All right, and we are back with Hunter Hodes of Locked On Penguins talking, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, how good they've been this year, how kind of like sneaky good. And it's wild to me that they're only in the first wild card, or at least they were when I last checked before recording this. It's wild considering, you know, they've been on an incredible hot streak. And they've done that a lot with Crosby and Malkin not being as impactful as you would think. I mean, Malkin was out with an injury and then immediately came back and then scored 2 goals in his return and all that and stuff. But Crosby too, I mean, he's been battling stuff. I mean, I know the Penguins have had a rash of injuries, COVID outbreaks, et cetera, et cetera. But how does it feel to have a really fully healthy lineup, like you said, like at the top of like the segment, for the first time in a while? Because it always feels like the Penguins have some sort of injury issue. They seem to lose a lot of man games to injury, and Crosby and Malkin are no exception to that. So it's great to have them back. But how does it feel to really have your full lineup and see it all, especially with, you know, Crosby and Malkin now there?
it was always an if, not when, with a lot of the people in the Penguins fan base, just because it looked like it was never going to happen. But it's just, it's finally nice to have, you know, a complement of forwards that they can step up if one of Sid or Gino or both are not playing well. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head with Gino. Had that nice game when he came back with those two goals. Hasn't been the same since, but I'm giving him a little more leeway just because he was out for so long. I mean, he'll wake up again eventually. You know, he's just getting his way back. Sid, I think, on the other hand, it's been tougher, I think, for a lot of things this year. He's just not shooting the puck like he normally does. And I know he's probably sacrificing that for his two-way game. And, you know, he's been one of the best two-way centers in the league the last, you know, several seasons. But I think he's gone away from himself a little bit. And a couple times the other night, you know, in Vegas when they were making that comeback, where on the power play, wide open lane to shoot it, has the puck, defers for a pass. And it's just like, buddy, I know you're Sidney Crosby here. You're one of the best players on the planet. Rip the shot there. You have one of the best shots in the league. And that's, I think, been really bugging him lately. But, you know, you've had players such as Evan Rodriguez come out of nowhere this year. He's having his best season of his career. He's gone a little cold lately, but is he really going to keep up an 80-point pace for an entire season? Probably not, right? But, you know, Danton Heinen's had 10 goals this year. That's another great signing from Ron Hextall. Well, 9, but it's soon to be 10. Brock McGinn has really been really nice since coming over from Carolina to fill in the Brandon Tanev spot. And, you know, he did get dunked on for the Jared McCann situation, and rightfully so. I didn't really like that trade, but it hasn't really mattered much, which is crazy to say because he's been awesome in Seattle, and even though that team's not that good. But the players that they've gotten to fill his role have just been so good at it, and everyone's just been able to step up. You know, I said Chris Letang, he's been really sensational this year in stepping up for when Crosby and Malkin are out. And, you know, we already said Gensel. Brian Russ has started to turn it on as of late. He's coming back from an injury as well. The only players that I think have been disappointments in the forward group are Kasperi Kapanen and Jason Zucker, one of which has just been healthy all year. The other one has just really not escaped the gulag at all. It's just been really, really struggling, I think, for a lot of this year. But it's just nice to have a complement of forwards that, you know, they can step up, because in Sid and Gino's early years back in, you know, 2013, 2014, you know, they had like Joe Vitale, Craig Adams, Tanner Glass down there. And it's just like, that's not going to do anything. Brandon Sutter, all those stuff. So, you know, I'm glad that, you know, the two recent GMs, and, you know, I know Jim Rutherford has his problems with a couple bad, really bad signings, but at least these two have understood the need to fill out a complementary forward group.
Yeah, yeah. The Mark Donk effect is real, but I have a different question to ask related to the Mark Donk effect. What team is going to give Brian Rust a long-term contract worth like $7 million this offseason?
Oh boy.
Because it's not going to be Pittsburgh, right?
No. I would love to keep Brian Rust. Don't worry. Don't get me wrong. He's awesome. Just a great player. But, you know, they got to sign Chris Letang. They got to sign Evgeny Malkin. You know, Jeff Carter's a free agent. I don't even know if he'll be coming back. If I had to make a guess, it's probably going to be Kenny Holland and the Edmonton Oilers, just because they can't seem to stop giving out bad contracts. And what a mess that team is right now. They are just not having a good time, as the saying goes. But I'd have to say probably that team. I could see, honestly, well, I was going to say Steve Yzerman and the Red Wings, but I don't really think Stevie Y would give out that kind of contract.
No. He's more savvy than that.
Now that Mark Bergevin has gone injured, I don't think Montreal would do that. I would have easily seen him giving out that kind of contract.
Technically with LA now, so
this is true.
So maybe you know, Mark Bergevin can't help himself. I know he's an assistant or advisor to the GM, but he still has a little bit of power. So maybe.
Yeah, I think he's assistant to the GM. He's the Dwight Schrute of the Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah.
Robert needs to listen to him.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting storyline to follow, though. I did want to ask about the Mark Donk effect, because that is, you can't talk about the Penguins without talking about Sidney Crosby and, you know, his merry band of men. And then also, of course, you know, the rest of the team, the Mark Donk effect. Is it just luck that the Penguins are like this, or is it something in their culture, in their system? Because this is like, it can't be luck anymore to me, because this is like, this has to just be part of that. To me, it has to just be part of their culture, because this has gone on for too long and this is, you know, too improbable. But every year there's at least one or two players that get it. But is it luck, or is it their system that makes it you know, work so well for them.
It's probably a bit of both. I also think it's part of their developmental system that, you know, is probably a bit underrated. And, you know, I know their prospect system is bottom probably five in the NHL, and rightfully so. They've given away almost all their prospects and picks. But, I mean, you know, take a guy like Evan Rodriguez, for example. You know, at first it looked like a Mark Donk effect, but now if everyone just looks at the numbers and everything, he's been probably one of the best players in the NHL this year. And obviously it came out of nowhere, but he probably worked on his game a lot this season. And, you know, his shot, especially every time he has the puck in the offensive zone, he rips it to the net. You know, he's not someone that's just going to, I'm trying to make a Harlem Globetrotters player or something like that. He's just going to go to the net. He'll rip it from anywhere. And, you know, you're seeing that a lot this year. The game against St. Louis about a week and a half ago, guy is on the power play, tied game. They challenge for the goaltender interference. He rips a full-on Ovechkin chop shot. I'm just like, I have never seen you do that before. Where did you get that in your game? But, you know, you have guys like Radim Zahorna down from Wilkes-Barre, who he's been developing a lot recently, and he's not a bad player. You know, Brian Boyle signs with the team. He's actually been a lot better than advertised, which is crazy because he had been out of the league for over a year. Caspi Rorquist, he was the same. He's been biding his time down there, made his NHL debut. He was sent back, but, you know, the Wilkes-Barre development system is probably a bit more underrated than some may think. I know the team is not that good this year, but, you know, they're still developing these players and, you know, they're putting them into positions to succeed. And, you know, a lot of that also does have to do with Mike Sullivan putting them on, you know, on the right line with the right line mates. And I think, you know, throughout the years that he has been there, you know, you're seeing all these random make a name players just contributing on their first or second game. And, you know, sure, some of them get sent down after, but, you know, but some of them do stay up and they continue to make an impact just because, you know, they play their best hockey under Sullivan and they've been developing, you know, kind of in that same system, you know, down in Wilkes-Barre.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're running out of time with you. I'm going to bundle my last two questions into two quick ones that you can answer together. I don't know if Andrew has anything else, but I'm going to ask these and then we will let you go. But Mike Sullivan, you mentioned, should he be in the running for the Jack Adams this year, given all his team has had to deal with? And also, what is the ceiling for this team? So they're semi-related questions. And, you know, basically, how high can this Penguins team go? And, you know, is, you know, Mike Sullivan in the running for the Jack Adams? Because he always seems to get the best out of his team, regardless of what happens.
If Mike Sullivan is not in the running for the Jack Adams, we probably should just scrap the award. Though I honestly said this last year because they finished first in the toughest division in the league, and he wasn't even a finalist despite having five of their top nine forwards out for probably a good month of the season. They still kept winning games. So I've kind of blanked that award out just because it's always like, oh, who gets the best goaltending? Who gets the best finishing percentage? And all
it's also like a redemption award too, in a sense.
Absolutely, yeah, I 100% agree with that. It's just I would hope that he would get Jack Adams consideration. I don't think there are 3 to 5 coaches that are better than what he does. I mean, John Cooper, Barry Trotz, you know, and then Mike Sullivan is probably honestly up there with those two, I mean, at least in my opinion. As for the ceiling for this team, I really think they can go on a run here, and especially if they get the goaltending – that's always the greatest equalizer. You know, if they get it, I've been saying it for honestly the last 6 or 7 years since, you know, they had Matt Murray. If they get average goaltending, they can win at least a series or two or even more. And, you know, we saw what happened in 2016-17 when they got well above average goaltending. That played a big part for them going on a run. But I for sure think they can come out of the Metro. I know there's 3 other really good Metro teams this year. That said, I don't know what's going on with the Rangers other than they have 4 elite players just playing the best hockey of their lives because their underlying numbers are flat out awful. They're still really good though. I think Pittsburgh could take down Washington in a 7-game series. I think my trust in them goes kind of down by the day. Carolina, I think I would love to see a Penguins Hurricane series. I'll put that out there on the show. They haven't played in almost over a decade and just the Jordan Stallard revenge series would be just through the roof with there. As for the other teams, I think they can play with the Florida teams, though they would have to get A, well above average goaltending, and I think B, they would have to really finish their chances. But I think overall for the ceiling, they can 100% make a run this year. You know, why not them with how they've been playing?
Yeah, absolutely. And they continue to be scary and continue to defy my expectations. And
no one is talking about them, Mary, which is perfectly fine. I don't want anyone to say that like they're the team to beat in the East. Leave that to the Florida teams or Toronto, whoever else that they're talking about. Just keep sleeping on the Penguins. That's all I want.
Yeah, I think the reason why we wanted to have you on is because I mentioned how I think on the last show or two shows previous that, like, you know, we haven't really been talking about the Penguins and they've been so good, but apparently that is the way you would like it and all other Penguins fans would like it. So I think we'll keep it that way for now. So before we let you go, can you plug your stuff? What are you doing? What's up with the podcast? Where can people find you?
Yeah. So you can follow me on Twitter at Hunter Hodes. The show's Twitter is at @LO_Penguins. It's also now on YouTube as my goal is to get to 100 subscribers. We're a little over 60. The show's been on there for about, what, 3 to 4, 4.5 weeks now. I think it's also on Apple and Spotify. Penguins play on Thursday evening against the Senators. It'll be Matt Murray's return to PPG. He won't be starting, but I'm excited for him to get hopefully a thundering ovation for what he did during those runs. Have a full off a full game recap for that one, and then they'll play on Friday against the Blue Jackets. So never stop with the content here, as they say.
Yeah, the grind never stops. But thank you so much, Hunter. It was great talking to you. As I said, we've been, you know, kind of mutuals on Twitter for a while, worked together. So it was, you know, good to, you know, talk to you face to face and get some, you know, Penguins opinions, because we've disagreed on them in the past, but I was in the wrong here. But, you know, good to have you on. And we will talk soon, I am sure.
Yes.
You know, we'd love to have other Locked On hosts on. So we will talk to you in the future.
Absolutely. And I will say, Mary, I was wrong about Kata Hot this year. He's been awesome. It just stinks that the rest of the team decided to. All right.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to have to let you go now. We can't do that accent on here. But thank you so much, Hunter. You're the best. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. I appreciate you all bringing me on. Thank you, guys.
All right. So that was a fun conversation with Hunter. I cannot believe he said Kata Hot like that to me. Me on my own podcast, on my own show. I can't believe I actually said that properly.
The audacity.
The audacity. All right, so we're going to go to break, and then we're going to end the show with our pop culture segment, as we always do with this show, and that'll be coming up right after this. It's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. If yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, maybe even better than a candy bar. Built Bar makes it easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good you'll want to eat it. Unlike other protein bars, which can be chalky or waxy or taste like a chemical spill. You want to eat healthy, but it just gets so boring. By like week 3, you might be thinking, this just isn't worth it. Where's the chocolate? Built Bars, however, are covered in 100% real chocolate. Most Built Bars contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which usually has around 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. Here's an idea for the new year. Go to all your secret treat stashes at home, in the pantry, in the office, in the car, wherever. Throw out all of the sugary or calorie-filled treats and replace them with Built Bars. So when you're craving a snack or a treat, you can reach for something that's healthy and tastes incredible. Even when you're not a huge fan of working out, you can at least eat something that tastes good and is good for you. That way, when you enjoy a delicious Built Bar, you can almost count it as a workout. And there's so many flavors to choose from. Coconut almonds, peanut butter brownie, raspberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel, milk brownie, and many more. In fact, Built is always coming out with something new, limited time flavors. So check out Built.com often to see what's new. So go to Built.com, use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, Andrew. So what a busy show we've had. You had Hunter on, talked a lot about, you know, Oilers, Canadians. So we're going to wind down our show for the day and for the week with pop culture talks. I don't know what you have, but I have two short things. One, they're ramping up promotion for Horizon Forbidden West, the sequel to one of my favorite video games, Horizon Zero Dawn, which I talked about because I'm replaying it. They're ramping up promotion for it because it comes out less than a month now, and I'm so excited. It's nice to be excited about a video game. I mean, I've had a couple video game releases in the last couple months that I was excited for, but 2022, like I said, is going to be a really big year for video games, so I'm really excited. And then also, I watched the first episode of the Book of Boba Fett, but only the first one, because I did not have time to continue. But I I mean, it was a slow-paced episode, but I heard it gets better, so I'm going to continue watching it. So I don't know if you have any thoughts and feelings, at least on the first episode, which happens like a month ago, basically. But I finally decided to give it a go just because I felt bad about not watching it. And we need something to talk about at this part of the show. So,
yeah, the first episode is definitely the worst episode of the series. It is more slow-paced and like the action isn't great. It gets a lot better on that front. I will say the one thing that is like kind of taking me out of Boba Fett a little bit is how heavily it references Star Wars. If you know what I mean, it's a weird thing to say because I know it's in the Star Wars universe, but like part of what I loved about Mandalorian was it was very adjacent. Like there were references to Star Wars
and a
like,
big moment or two, but
yes, and a big moment. Well, especially in the second season, a huge moment, right? That was spectacular, but it built to that over time. But there were like little world building references, but for the most part it was very much its own story, whereas Boba Fett is like, it's still Jon Favreau, so like there's purposefulness to it, but it's very much like, and here's a Star Wars reference, and here's a Star Wars reference, and remember that droid, and remember this droid, and remember Max Rebo, he's in this place now, and it's like Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they go back to the cantina in the first episode. So like, you know, I mean, it's nice. I think the funnest thing for me was the interactions between Boba Fett and the assassin lady, who I just know as Ming-Na Wen because she's the best.
Fennec.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Their interactions were funny, and I hope that they build off of that in the episodes to come. Like I said, I only watched one of them, so I don't really know. It'll definitely be something I think I can like plug away on. I might not sit down and watch an episode in full. I might, you know, watch like 15 minutes here when I can. And maybe that's just for the best. I don't know. I haven't really been in like a TV watching mood recently. I'm not sure what it is, but I always feel compelled to have to bring something to the table for the show. So I don't look like all I do is play video games, which that is all I do. But like, I feel like I need to bring variety to the table. So I try. So but what do you have, Andrew? I know usually these episodes, the second episode of the week usually is less on the pop culture side. But still, what have you got?
Yeah, I watched the first three episodes of Peacemaker, which the fourth episode comes out on Thursday today. That was very interesting. If you watched James Gunn's Suicide Squad, it's a spinoff of that with one of the characters from that from that movie, and very much the same. Like it's still James Gunn in charge. He's making the series. So same tone, add some layers to that character. So far, it's absolutely wild in the most James Gunn way. It completely unhinged and great. And if you want to get an idea of how stupid and great the show is, go to YouTube and watch the opening credits for the show, because it is a full on choreographed dance number with everyone looking super serious, including John Cena. And there's actually outtakes online where, like, when they were rehearsing, John Cena wasn't available, so they had Alan Tudyk step into his role, which always fun because Alan Tudyk is great in everything. But yeah, it's fun. I've really enjoyed it so far. I think that I'm excited to watch the fourth episode.
Nice. That's really cool. I don't know if that's something I'll watch, but that's really neat. I might actually at least check out the intro on YouTube, because that sounds like really fun, and you know, I like a good bit of fun. But that's all we have for you today on the Crosscheck NHL Show. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Make sure to follow us on your podcast platform of choice, from Apple to Odyssey to Spotify and now YouTube, and rate and review us while you're at it. You can follow the pod at Crosscheck NHL on Twitter, me at Mary C. Clark on Twitter, and Andrew at Andrew Berkshire on Twitter. Thanks for making the Crosscheck NHL Show your first listen every Tuesday and Thursday. We'll be back on Tuesday with some more Puck Talk, but now make your second listen, Locked On Bets. Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling.